There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
We on the Business Breakfast are proud when Dubai and Abu Dhabi-based companies do well in any field. And yesterday, Abu Dhabi National Oil Company, ADNOC, received a AA-plus credit rating from Fitch Ratings, which makes it the top-rated oil and gas company in the world. In the studio to outline what ADNOC did right is the company's CFO, Mark Cutis. Good morning and congratulations.
Thank you. Good morning.
In their ratings rationale, why did Fitch say that you were worthy of that AA-plus rating?
Fitch did extensive work when they came in to look through our books and records. And they looked at our reserves, they looked at our profitability, they looked at our underlying capital strength, and they looked at the enormity of the programs, but our ability to finance them. So doing all this complex calculations and work, they came to the conclusion that we deserved a AA-plus rating.
Talk to us through your links to the Abu Dhabi government and really how much Fitch linked your rating to the reference point of the Abu Dhabi sovereign rating.
Well, I mean, I would say that a lot of what happens in the economy of Abu Dhabi is driven by the enormity of ADNOC's contribution. So, you know, for them, the issue was how strong are our links to the government in terms of us handing over our surplus to them. And I think they were comfortable that there is very strong governance between ADNOC and the government, that we're not just a receptacle for, you know, for forwarding funds to them. So they felt very comfortable with our position and how we managed our finances.
But I've always sort of imagined that most of your sort of surplus money that you're not using for operating purposes does go to the government.
Absolutely. Right. That's the government is the shareholder, yeah. And therefore you return the funds to the government.
What does this positive rating do for ADNOC in terms of access to capital, access to cheaper money, and of course reputation?
Yeah, that's the key question. I mean, the first thing is that it validates our underlying creditworthiness, which a lot of our counterparties knew implicitly. For instance, the international banks, they rate us internally with their shadow credit ratings at the highest rating. It's comforting for them to see that a third party that is not linked to their business, to the bank's business, is actually giving us an independent rating. So it validates that we are one of the strongest credits. That's number one. Number two, it sends a signal to the broader community that we manage our finances well and that we're a conservatively run company that has access to credit. And number three, because of the enormity of the programs that we're undertaking, it's also a signal to the broader community that we're a well-run and well-managed company.
And we were talking about the Brent crude price just then, $66.30, West Texas morning, $56.35. But over the years that I've been here, the petrol price at the pump has been artificially low. And I wonder about your profitability numbers, strong profitability numbers. Any company largely selling their main product at a government-prescribed or an artificially low price would have little wriggle room to achieve good products. What did ADNOC do right?
Well, actually, several years ago, the prices were essentially
about three or
unlinked.
Four years, yeah.
Unlinked. So yeah. We don't have to face, you know, that conundrum. What should we do as prices are going up or down? So I think that was good because you allowed the market mechanism, the marketplace, to signal, you know, when prices go up so that people consume less, and when prices go down, they consume more. More importantly, you don't have the problem of subsidies. So I think overall, that was a very positive thing. The second thing is that ADNOC distribution was floated, a piece of it was floated in December of 2017. And that's also improves the governance because you're bringing in outside third-party investors. One small part of what we've done, obviously.
When those artificially low oil prices meant that you couldn't make much money from selling petrol, which is your main business, you tried to get people into the shops at the petrol stations and things to get some nice, healthy profit. Since the prices have been de-linked, if you like, and they're floating, have the shops themselves become less important to you?
No, actually, the shops are a cornerstone of the strategy. And if you think about the shop is a network that you're supposed to be supplying your clients. It's not, yes, of course, as a CFO, we're here to, you know, to return a profit. But ultimately, we're here to serve our customer base. And by providing them a one-stop shop, you are giving them more reasons to feel comfortable to stop and get their gas.
if we take a step back, in the release for the rating, Sultan Al-Jaber, His Excellency Dr. Sultan Al-Jaber, who's, among other things, the CEO of ADNOC, talked about, and this is his word, the transformation taking place in ADNOC. We're coming up to 3 years since he was appointed as Chief Executive Officer. You've come in within the past year or so to be the Chief Financial Officer. Let's take a step back and talk about that transformation. From what and to what?
So, from a conservatively run national oil company that had a very strong track record for developing and exploiting its reserves, to a company that's much more open to inward investment flows from partners, such as the large international oil companies, and as well, eventually there will be private capital partners. So what you're doing is you're opening the company to outside capital. What does that do for you? It brings in expertise. It brings in, obviously, know-how. It brings in best-of-breed practices. It brings in capital. And it also injects, you know, new blood, which is DNA. So that's the transformation that our CEO is always talking about and always, you know, heartens for.
One of our top stories this morning is reports in the FT. I'm sure you've read them. BlackRock and KKR, big private equity firms, reported to be in advanced talks to take a $5 billion stake in your pipeline network. Have you anything to you can tell us about that or other similar deals?
It's we don't comment on reports. So I mean that's
not that specific story, but generally speaking, this move to allow companies the likes of KKR and BlackRock to be investing in the company, that's the broad theme that you're talking about.
So it's what you have oil companies, which we've had long-standing relationships. And if you go back to the 70s, one of the interesting things that ADNOC did was, unlike other international oil companies, they opened up to, they allowed the oil companies to stay in. And this is, they've had that kind of relationship for some time. Now, we are also opening up ourselves to the more non-traditional suppliers of capital. So yes, I mean, we are open for business. And most importantly, as our CEO always says, we're open to interesting ideas from outside providers of capital or expertise.
We've got lots of questions coming in. Let me throw a couple at them. Many of them are about ADNOC Distribution, the petrol stations. Now, I know that's a very small bit of the organization that you're the CFO of, but nevertheless, people are interested. They use it all the time. Here we go. Someone writes in, for a profitable company, how come you're charging people 10 dirhams to fill up their car with gasoline or petrol? And also thoughts on Kafru, which is the petrol delivery business that takes petrol to people's homes rather than us going to fill up at one of your stations.
Well, first of all, I wish John Kerry, which the deputy president, was here, because this is kind of his remit and he would answer it effortlessly. But at the end of the day, the issue of what we charge people at the pump, they have, you know, consumers, including myself and my wife, you know, you can pump your own gas, so you don't necessarily have to pay the 10 dirhams. So I'm not sure I can say more than that, or I know more than that.
Someone else writes in, Irfan wants to know about your projects overseas, especially in Pakistan and India. What are your plans there, and why would you be expanding into places like Pakistan and India?
Well, if you think about when you make investments, you know, proximity defines investment appetite to a certain extent. And those are countries that are near where we are. So, and those are countries that have, they need our oil supplies, or they need oil supplies in general. So it makes sense for us to reach out and look at doing constructive sort of relationships with these countries to supply them with oil on a long-term basis.
And just remind us what it is you're doing in India and Pakistan, or talking about doing.
Yes. Nothing has been done. We've signed various memorandums of understanding, and we're working on different projects, but nothing really yet has taken shape. But it's essentially providing oil on a long-term basis, in terms of putting it, you know, putting it through into refineries and related businesses.
Another question coming in about people. It's one of the four pillars of the new ADNOC under your CEO, His Excellency Sultan Al-Jaber. And the question is, how is ADNOC balancing the need for emiratization with ensuring a performance culture?
I think one is not mutually exclusive from the other. So any company has to focus on the performance culture to make sure that it's that the people are performing at their kind of peak capability. So that's something that our CEO, Dr. Sultan, is always focused on. And as far as amortization is concerned, you know, that's a long-standing objective, which year in, year out, we increase the percent of amortization. And it makes sense if you think about it. You live in the UAE, the bulk of your employees should be locals.
Look, we on the Business Breakfast, I mean, we talk about the oil market, but I guess our understanding of the oil market is probably limited to stories that we read, reports from Baker Hughes about rig counts and things like that. And it was reported last year that ADNOC is talking to Baker Hughes about an investment and possibly some, not just an investment into rigs, etc., but also into the company as well. Has that taken place? Is
yes,
it taking place?
Yes, that took place, yeah. And it was signed several months ago. And Baker Hughes, which is a great company, they came in and they acquired 5% of ADNOC Drilling. And what they've done is, you know, they're injecting their people, they're injecting their expertise, and they're injecting their knowledge of other marketplaces. So that's a good example of the collaborative type of relationships that the institution is trying to put together around the world to bring in, again, DNA, capital and expertise.
We've got you in the studio this morning, Mark, because ADNOC has just been given a double A plus rating from Fitch. How many different arms and profit centers are there to ADNOC?
So you have multiple what they call OPCOs, operating companies. Yeah. So you have, you know, 14, 15 different businesses. And the idea behind setting them up as separate businesses is that you encourage outside partners to come in to a specific business where they bring in very defined expertise. So if you had one, you know, big giant company with divisions, it would be much more difficult to separate the P&L. So by having these operating companies, then you can be very specific when you bring in outside capital.
When they were writing their ratings report, did they drill down into all of those smaller parts of the business or just look at sort of ADNOC top line?
Well, they actually did both. And they didn't, I mean, we have some small companies too. What the ratings agencies are looking for is, are you a stable enterprise? Where does your cash come from? How stable is it? What do you do with it? And what kind of liabilities do you have? How much debt do you have? And realistically, we don't have much debt. So all those together constitutes what makes a favorable rating. Yes, they did look down, they drilled down, but they were looking at the major cash generators.
But I imagine also important for Fitch would have been the fact that presumably you have an explicit guarantee of support from the Abu Dhabi government.
Yes. But again, you have to think about the strength that the country derives from the cash flow capabilities and generation of ADNOC. So it works both ways. It's not just Abu Dhabi. It's what ADNOC does. And it's obviously a symbiotic relationship.
Let's talk about what happens next. A couple of years ago, less than that, we had the ADNOC Distribution IPO stock market listing, which was a landmark, the fact that we could own a bit of a major Middle East government oil-producing company like ADNOC. And of course, we know that Saudi Aramco has been talking about an IPO for a long, long time now. How far could this IPO process go for you? Will there ever be a day when the ADNOC parent company is listed on a stock market? And if not, what are the kind of halfway houses to that?
That's a very good question. I mean, ultimately, that's a question, legitimate question that can be asked of, you know, the owners, which is the government. You know, but if you think about it from the perspective of a CFO, my role is to make this company ready to be flexible to do whatever makes sense at the time. And it doesn't necessarily mean what makes sense is to go IPO. You could IPO a business, and we've done that already with ADNOC Distribution. You could IPO the company, and that's what Aramco has been planning to do. You could do a joint venture with another big company. You can do a merger. There's a lot to do. So from the perspective of the CFO, my job is to make sure we're ready for any of those possibilities, because ultimately the people who will decide are the owners.
Finally, it's a high-pressure job, CFO of ADNOC. I mean, it's a cornerstone of the economy. I know we're more diversified than we were 20, 30 years ago, but still, ADNOC and its revenues are huge. What percentage of the GDP do you estimate that ADNOC is responsible for here in the UAE?
So of the UAE, I saw these figures recently, of the UAE, it's more than 30%.
So you're the chief finance officer of a company that accounts for more than 30% of the country's GDP. That's a massive job. And my final question is why you are the CFO? Because when we talk about the transformation of ADNOC, or when His Excellency Sultan Al-Jaber talks about the transformation, the fact that you've been hired as CFO is interesting, because your background is not as an auditor. Typically, we think a CFO would 25 years as a partner with Deloitte, and then you take a big CFO job. But your job is, your background is very much in investments. For 10 years, you worked at the Abu Dhabi Investment Council. What does that tell us about the future of ADNOC, if anything?
I mean, I think the right person to ask that is Dr. Sultan. But what he's trying to do is bring in people who have different backgrounds to essentially reinforce the capabilities of the company and to prepare it for this transformation journey.
Thank you so much for joining us and spending an extended period with us. We do appreciate it, Mark. Mark Cutis, the CFO at ADNOC. We look forward to having you back in the studio again.
Thank you for having me.
And congratulations on your AA+ rating from Fitch.
Thank you.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.